There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby!
That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Thursday edition of the show. And as I mentioned, I don't get to talk to her that often because the executive branch is very busy. And but we found her on a day where she could talk to me. The grand potentate over at Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. It's great to talk to Ashley Trice. Hey, Ashley.
Hey, Sean Sullivan. How are you?
I'm good. Before we get into this breaking news over at lanyapmobile.com that I need to talk to you about big time and get an education here, what happened. But we were talking about Crocs a second ago and this lawsuit, you know, about Crocs out there and the fact that you're not, you don't have Crocs yourself, but you do have a child with a pair of Crocs.
Yes. Yeah. It pained me to have to buy those Crocs for him, you know. I mean, whoever made those cool again, you know, excellent work, you know.
Well, what Dalton came in last hour and told me during a break, he said, Sean, you know the person who's going back, who was at Crocs and who is now going back to Crocs? I said, no, I don't. He said, it's the person that made the Stanley Cups the must-have item. Those thermos.
Is that true?
Yeah, he said it's that person, I guess, left Crocs, went to Stanley, and got them to do different colors and got, like, influencers to start.
Another idiotic product I had to buy for my daughter.
See? So there you go.
I
this
mean,
person.
It's the worst product ever, by the way. I mean, they fall over. I mean, the amount of urination required after you drink that much water, it's ridiculous. I'm going to punch this guy or gal in the face next time I see him.
Dalton will get me the name here by the time we go to the news break, and I'll pass along so you can put a fatwa out on him for sure. Yeah. All right. This y'all need to hop on over to lanyapmobile.com and read up here because this is more of what I've been wondering. There's the mayor's spoken, Chief Prine spoken, but the name of James Barber has come up a bunch. And until now, I haven't heard the side of the story from Mobile Chief of Staff James Barber. But y'all have this up at lanyapmobile.com right now. What happened? Y'all have a meeting with him? What went down?
So yesterday he met, we met for almost 3 hours. I mean, a lot of it we had to keep off the record because they've got pending litigation and personnel matters and, you know, all of that. But he did go on the record for a few, you know, to give us, you know, to respond to some of what Prine had said. You know, I guess my takeaway from the whole conversation is, well, let me back up. When I watched Chief Prine on Foxton and I watched both of his lengthy interviews, I said, I believe every word he says. Mm-hmm. Or at least I believe that he believes every word he says. I found him very believable and authentic. And, you know, and I will say that after meeting with Chief of Staff Barber yesterday, I kind of feel the same way about him. And I think, and you're like, well, how could that be true? But I think in this case, both of those things can be true. I think this, some of the same events were happening and they were being interpreted in different ways. For instance, when, you know, according to the Chief of Staff Barber and the mayor, there were problems almost instantly with the way Chief Prime was, his leadership style. You know, they did some sort of survey that law enforcement uses to, you know, survey their commanding officers, and the scores came back pretty low, and then there had been some complaints. And so they viewed it as, well, we're not going to just fire him on this. We are going to try to help him and support him. So they bring in, you know, these consulting groups and all of that to try to improve things, you know, and that's the sort of stuff that he started looking at as micromanagement. And, you know, then I think the more support that he was getting is the more irritated Chief Prime was getting. And then the relationships just started breaking down is what it looks like to me. And then they got to a point where, you know, Chief Prime is like, you know, making demands that they could not meet, such as, you know, I want the Gulf Coast Technology Center under my command. Well, they're like, we have 43 different independent agencies that work there. It was not under Batiste's command, and it can't be under your command. I mean, this is what they're telling us, you know. This is not what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, also that, you know, he said that he did not want to have to answer to Richard Lasky or to Chief Barber, Chief of Staff Barber. And, you know, the mayor is just like, well, there's, I mean, that's the chain of command, and I value these people, and there's really no remedy to that. And so they said that is their, that's what they say that this was all about, that he was fired for those reasons.
Now, that survey you talked about, was that given to the community or was it given to people at MPD that they're talking about?
My understanding is just given it to the people at MPD. It was like an internal study that lots of law enforcement agencies use, like just a survey kind of thing. So, about your confidence in your chief, and, you know, if you, like, one of the questions was like, if you could get a job elsewhere for the same pay, would you read? You know, that kind of thing. So that was.
And was that specific? I don't know if they said that. Was that specific to with the leadership of Prime, or was that if I'm.
Yeah.
In law enforcement.
Yeah. There were questions about just the general work environment, but there were some about him too. So they said that was a problem early on, and that's what they were trying to address. You know, and so and then the other big takeaway from the conversation is it's like once a relationship soured, they said, you know, Chief Prime began believing that everyone was out to get him. So he was viewing everything as all the reports as a conspiracy against him. You know, they said the ShotSpotter report, which I'll get it to, because there are still some questions around that they didn't even really view that as a big indictment on Chief Prime, and it had nothing to do with the decision. Now, there are still questions surrounding that report because, I mean, to me, this is the biggest problem the city has is this report. It does look shady. I mean, there's a $92,000 contract with this 321Z Insight. No, Chief Prime thinks it was just for this report. And the city is telling us, no, you know, there is something called Intelligent U. They are, that $92,000 is for them to do Intelligent U. Yes, the timing does look bad and suspect, but it was not for that report. That report was actually written by Levy, the commander of the GCTC, I forget his first name, but Commander Levy wrote the report and then gave it to 321Z Insights for a peer review, they called it.
And yeah, y'all asked some questions about that. I mean, a peer review versus another review, I was kind of,
yeah,
that lost
I mean,
me.
I mean, I think the city is losing the argument on this one. I mean, when you say peer review, it's not read it and then put another company's name on top of it. You know, if someone's doing a peer review of a journalist, I would ask someone I do not know, and who is also a journalist, someone else in my field, to review how I conducted an interview and notes, and did I do it in the proper fashion, and they, the objective third party who does not know me, would say yes, she did this right, or no, she did this wrong, or whatever. So they're trying. I mean, and there's just really no way. I mean, when you look at the document, there's a letterhead that says 321Z Insights, and it says we present this analysis, the attached analysis. I go, okay, well, if if Levy wrote the analysis, I mean, what else can you take except that they were trying to present it as their work, you know, whatever. So I think they're losing that argument on that. And I think that it's the biggest question that we still have is, okay, are we letting city employees do this on a routine basis and then present, you know, every time that we need a study, you know, are we letting a city employee write it? And then we have another company that was, you know, formed, you know, on LegalZoom saying, yeah. Oh, yes. You know, yes, we do need a parking garage at the Civic Center, you know.
And then I mean, you can, it's like, CYA, right? I mean, you can imagine yeah. it being CYA. You do this,
yeah.
have
mean,
a third party say.
I'm going to start a consulting business as soon as I'm in my second life because, yep. you know, it's amazing how they always say what you want them to say. And apparently it's not cheap to get these. But anyway.
$92,000.
So the city says, you know, they did not pay for this report at all. Just this. Levy had a relationship with the principal in it, or the principal's wife, Mark Baker, and just trusted him to look at it and make sure it was worded properly. A second set of eyes, this is not paid for. And if they, this study wasn't even in the consideration in the prime, in prime's dismissal. So, I mean, that is what they say. You can believe who you want to believe, but you know,
yeah,
I still think there are unanswered questions about that study, though. I mean, and they say they're investigating it right now to see kind of how it went down and, you know, what the relationship was, how the contract was awarded in the first place.
Yeah, I just would like to know, and I asked the mayor this, does ShotSpotter work? EchoStop, which, does the machine work? And he said, yes. And he said the problem was with the implementation. I know that's discussed in here with that. And, you know, I was talking about that the other day and had one of the texters, I think Terry, brought up a good point. He said, then wouldn't it be incumbent upon the company that offer, you know, to bring, if y'all get something at Lanyap, right, some new system or whatever technology, and it's not, folks there are not, you know, especially like Dale Leash. If Dale Leash can't handle it, don't you think then it's time for more training? I mean,
yes.
It doesn't it beg that question?
Yeah, I mean, but look, ShotSpotter, I mean, whoever, talk about, you know, the Croc and the Stanley Cup people, whoever got the ShotSpotter contracts across this whole entire country, most of it which was paid with pandemic funds, they are largely have been deemed failures in just about every city. Just Google it and you'll see.
Yeah, I heard Birmingham had like no success, not no success, but it was not successful there, I know.
I mean, just when you think about it, a microphone and cameras and gunshots, I mean, it doesn't really make any sense when the police get there. Okay, big deal. They're gone. They're long gone by the time they get there. So, I mean, you know, I think they say that, you know, it helps them gather intelligence about what areas and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, I'm sure it's not completely useless, but I don't think anybody's saying this has solved our crime problem at all. You know, and, but, I mean, apparently Batiste really liked ShotSpotter. Barber says he was not a huge fan of it, and they did tell us they don't even think they're going to renew the program. So,
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it wasn't cheap, I don't think.
No, it was millions of dollars, but it was, you know, it was COVID money.
Yeah,
so
well, that's still
like free money, right?
Yeah, still, we have it as part of our debt.
Dollars.
Yeah, still our tax yeah. dollars, part of our debt out there. So in this conversation, and y'all need to read through, there's so much to it here. Did you feel like there was any compromise or resolution to come from this, or are people just in their corners on this still?
I mean, I think that the relationship between Prine and Stimson and Barber is far too fractured for him to ever go back. I mean, I think that's definitely over. Barber did say some very nice things about Prine, that he got attrition down and that he was good with the officers, you know, pumping them up and stuff like that.
But if the officers didn't like him. But if I don't know. I mean, there's so much I don't know here. But if that report they're referring to, this you said standard law enforcement report that goes out, came back with bad marks against Chief Prine, then how did he get attrition down? If people didn't want to be there.
There is a lot of contradictory elements here. No doubt. So.
And the report, and this other thing, so Kenyon Brown's report which I guess I'm guessing there's some kind of draft copy out there because there's been references to it from the executive branch, but I know it's not out for anybody else out there. Is this what was it? It wasn't even like an NDA. It was like a NDA, non-disparagement agreement or something out there. Was this what they were going to hold back if he would take the deal? If Chief Prime would take the deal, they wouldn't get the Kenyon Brown report out, or did you
figure out? That's what they say. And so, I mean, of course, that doesn't look good either, because then why are we paying this money for it?
Correct.
A report you can manipulate. So, you know, that's, yes, apparently they have not seen the report, they say. They have been briefed on it, and that there are things that are not going to look good for the chief in it, and they were trying, I mean, what they say is that they were trying to give him one of the most generous severance packages that any city employees ever had, and that they would just try to keep his name out of it as much as they could, that they were not going to change anything that was material, you know, to the report out of it. They were just going to try to help manage the damage, I guess, manage the damage.
Okay, well, that wording maybe changes my mind a little bit, because just reading it on the face and not with that nuance, it's, you know, if I say, hey, I got a report that's going to be damning to you, but really, if you do what I want, then I'm not going to release it.
I read it as a threat, too, and then I went, well, who on earth would put this in writing? You know, maybe if you're having a discussion and say, look, this is going to be bad for you, buddy. What, you better take this good severance package here, or else it's not going to look good, and someone's going to have to go, and it's going to be you. You know, but you put that in writing? Well, apparently they put it in writing because he wanted his attorney to look it over. So that was probably an action they probably would regret making right there. So anyway, I mean, you know, I don't see how you can view it as any other way than a threat, but, we asked him, you know, did Prime successfully, you know, delegitimize this report already? Is anyone going to believe anything that it said? And they say yes. That it is, you know, that Kenyon Brown has got a sterling reputation. The city council trusts him. This report is mainly about policies and procedures. And it's, quite frankly, they say it's going to make the city not look good. And so that why would we, if we wanted to fire Prime, we could have just fired him. We didn't need to make the city look bad in the process and spend money on this report. And so, you know.
What happens? What are you hearing? What happens Tuesday with City Council? Will they move to fire Chief Prine, or what capacity will they be in?
I don't know if they're there yet. Tuesday's the big report day. That's when the Kenyon Brown report. I mean, they are starting the council meeting, I think, at 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So they can take hours and hours to get through it. I imagine they'll want to digest that a little before they take any immediate action, but I could be wrong. You know, I would think they would want to go through it. And, you know, and seeing, you know, we were told the media would also get it on Tuesday. So, so we'll see. I mean, you know, it just really depends on what's in this report. So
there you go. So as an incentive for people to be ready to go ahead and get subscribed to Lanyap, they'll be watching that when it comes out first thing.
Yeah.
So how do they do that?
They just go to lanyapmobile.com, hit the subscribe button, and you will be. You'll sign up and you'll get all the updates on all of this. We are basically a daily paper at this point. So, you know, just online. So
check it out there.
You can also get the paper copy all over. And
yeah.
It's got Chief Ron and the saga.
Yeah, I figured that was well-timed. I saw it out, I guess, yesterday evening, and I said, it makes sense. You have Chief Prine on the cover. You know, people picking that one up even faster than normal. So, well done.
Oh, yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
All right, Ashley, we'll talk again soon whenever the executive branch can
go
get your Stanley Cup. Hey, stand by. I got something to tell you. Stand on the phone. I'll be right back. The rest of us are going to the news.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 128 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad to have you here. 343-0106 gets you through on the text line. And a lot of texts coming in on this. There's it's in, you need to go read through the story over there at landnetmobile.com. Through this whole process, I'm trying to get all the parts of this, and there are many to me that seem contradictory. But it, you know, I like I said at the end of my interview with last week with Mayor Stimson, I said, you know, can we do something to resolve this? Because I think both Mayor Stimson and Chief Prine have been very good for our city. Very good for our city. So is there any, and it seems like it is fractured beyond that at this point. But I you know, we as a city are going to lose one way or another. This, I think we're losing in this. So it's sad. It's a sad statement here. So if you'll check it out, I want to hear your responses to that as well. It's over at landnetmobile.com and you can check it out there. All right. Coming back, a pile of text here, even some that aren't about Crocs. We'll get into that. And also, Israel, should they respond or should they chill? I know that's not a regular realpolitik word there, but I mean, what do you think about Israel responding? Now Iran says they're going to respond right back. What should Israel do?
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Until 1:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Thursday. And the segment of the show brought to you by my buddy Forrest at Blue Water Yacht Sales and Service. And I've been talking about the extended deals going on here into the month of April. They have these new boat incentives going on Regulator, Jupiter, Albemarle, Bulls Bay, and also Solace. And the Solace boats, so when Forrest called me, he said, you got to check out Solace boats. And I said, man, that's a fine boat. He said, you know who made that, who designed that? And he said, I don't know. And he says, Bob Daugherty. So Bob Daugherty, for boat freaks here, well, so he's the guy that got Boston Whaler Boats to start making center console boats when they went from the skiff to the center console. So he's the engineer there. Then he leaves Whaler. I think he went, where'd he go? Now, he ended up starting Everglades boats, right? Which are real fine boats. Starts that, sells that, and then is now building the boat he wants to build here in his later years. And this guy is like an engineering machine. I mean, he's, you know, like aerospace engineer designing boats. And these Solace boats are all that and the bag of chips. Daugherty difference. They got years of advanced technology and manufacturing process. These boats are built fiberglass and carbon fiber. And they vacuum bag and infuse the boat that makes it lightweight, so you can get a bigger boat running less engine. It's really cool, the size boats and the strength of them for the weight compared to other boats. They have the, including carbon fiber, they have a hybrid vinyl ester poly resin that sets Solace boats apart from other center consoles. Two boarding ladders come standard in the transom port and starboard, integrated telescoping ladder, so you're accessible by water. Sunlight viewable rear-facing LED cockpit screens, that's good. Instead of me having to hold, you know, my hat over the LCD to be able to read it. I love that option for the stabilizers, gyro stabilizers already. So you don't have to do a bunch of cutting. They're already set up to put those in the boat. Electric fully opening windshield with a wiper and washer. Also reversible transom seating, recessed outboard for increased deck space. I love this thing. Out of all the design of the boat on these Solace boats, it was so awesome. That part is great, but everybody can appreciate this. Magnetic cup holders in the boat. So they have metal in the boat to where your cup holders or like your rack for your fishing tools or whatever can be moved around the boat wherever you need them. So instead of putting screws in the boat, which all of us hate to do, or putting some 5200 on there, it's magnetic. So you can move all these different parts. You know, okay, I want my pliers here. I want this drink over here. You can move it all around because it's magnetic. Really are cool boats, Solace boats. You can check them out in person. Go see what I'm talking about when you go to Blue Water Yacht Sales and Service. They are on the 65 Belt Line between, you know, north of Dolphin Street and south of Old Shell on the 65 Belt Line on the east side and at Orange Beach Marina. See them online at bluewateryachtsales.net. But you got to see these boats in just go see them. Go check out what I'm talking about. And while you're there, check out all the other deals on all the great manufacturers that have boats with special pricing on them right now at Blue Water Yacht Sales and Service. But I just thought, to boat nerd out for a second, these Solus boats or something. Good for, I love competition. I love it. Keeps making things better and better. I can't figure out how the state got the bridge down there for $60 million, but I can figure out how that competition makes these boats better and better. All right. Yeah, a lot of people, I guess, have gone and read that article now over at LandNetMobile.com. I would do it as well, the discussion with Jim Barber and what he had to say about the situation. The part I'm getting, there's some of this stuff that just seems contrary. Contrary is how I act. It's contrary to itself. You know, one side says this, one side says that. I'm funny like this. I would like to know what really happened. Let's see. So this texter says, Kenyon Brown's left-wing political activist appointed by Obama. As U.S. Attorney in Mobile, he spent more time going after apartments that violated the handicap rules and criminals. Why would Mobile hire such a man? He's got, well, Mobile roots, and he's, in this case, you know, they're saying he's third party to do the report. But it is a question asked, is anybody truly a third party when the person, the entity paying them, does that change their allegiance? I don't know. I would say Kenyon Brown's probably above that. We'll see what comes out in the report. I'm not going to judge the report until I see the report. Yeah. Anderson and Foley said the question of should Israel retaliate is best described by Abbott Costello's Who's On First. It's a tough one. I mean, there's part of it, and you could tell when the talking points go out. And it's, you know, you watch it, watch cable news in the evening, watch it last night. And it goes from this question, not that Republicans have not, in support of Israel, pretty much lockstep, with a few exceptions, and some Democrats, right, in support of Israel. But it was a little bit quiet after Saturday night. It was, okay, here's the message came out of Washington, even not just from the Biden administration, kind of overall, was, wow, look what the Iron Dome did. Look what these defense, you know, these defense measures did to shoot down all these drones and missiles coming into Israel. And that was the discussion. Then last night I heard a change. And it was, I saw Ted Cruz and others on the cable news saying it was Israel had to respond, making it like there's no other choice. So Israel can say, listen, we had no other choice. We had to respond. It is worrisome to me. The response, and should they respond? Should they respond? I'll ask this. Should they respond inside the borders of Iran? This is nothing to defend Iran. This is just, is this that next step that we can't come back from, right? Is the situation, and Iran's saber rattling, where's the story here from, I don't know who had it, it was up here, you know, Iran doing their normal Iran stuff. Iran be Iraning. Said, you know, if they hit us, we're going to hit them back more than they'll ever know, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they have to, you remember, Iran has to do their part to keep their people satiated, right, back home. So they're putting this out. But if Iran does live up to that, and so Israel does whatever it does in retaliation, then Iran comes back bigger. You see where this goes. And I think Iran has the right to defend itself, to get Hamas gone. I 100% agree with that. I just wonder the change in the tenor of the conversation, at least what I saw last night in cable news, which doesn't mean what everybody thinks, but it sounded like there are new talking points out there and almost an American demand from the right, from the Republicans to demand that Israel respond. Now, Associated Press reports this, that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel would decide whether or how to respond to Iran's major air assault earlier this week, brushing off calls for restraint from close allies. That would be the United States and others, but U.S. here. It says Israel's vowed to respond to Iran's unprecedented attack, leaving the region bracing for further escalation after months of fighting in Gaza. Israel's allies have been urging Israel to hold back on any response to the attack that could spiral. That's why I asked this question of Congressman Carl on Monday. I said, what if Iran would have been successful? What if those missiles would have been successful? I feel like it would be a completely different discussion, but thank God they weren't. Is this a does this, is this this opportunity here to cool down the region, or does Israel not just lose face if they don't fight back, but do they encourage further attacks from Iran? I know tomorrow, just to preview tomorrow's show, my buddy Jonathan McConnell from Meridian U.S., Marine, guy that works putting people on ships in places like we're talking about in the Red Sea and others, will join me. We'll talk about it with him. But I do wonder that if we take the bait, and I don't think Iran wants, you know, as much as people would like to say it in rhetoric out there, Iran does not want a head-to-head war with the United States. I don't want a head-to-head war with Iran. Can Israel take this one and not go bigger response back to Iran and cool this off? Or do they have to? Because remember, they still could be fighting the proxies of Iran in Gaza. But can they choose not to do some strike inside the borders of Iran to show? Because Iran struck inside the borders of Israel, right? And the consulate that Israel knocked out that started this, I mean, this thing's been going on a long time, but this latest set of downs started with Israel attacking the consulate in Syria, so outside Iran's borders. Iran responds with missiles and drones coming into Israel. If Israel responds now, they're going to have to do it inside Iranian borders, right? So what would that ratchet this up to? So what does Israel do? I'd like to hear from you at 343-0106, 343-0106. Yeah, so Tony and Sim says, Tony, I felt this last night. Okay, so Tony writes this. The American media and the American politicians are saying exactly what AIPAC is telling them to say because they know that if they don't, they'll be out of a job in no time. It did seem, Tony, you and I are on the same page. It did seem, if you watched Talking Heads last night, how quickly they changed. Now, somebody who always speaks like that and then would continue it, I go, okay, that's a fair arbiter. And there are people out there that I agree and disagree with, but they're fair arbiters. That's who they are. It seemed like there was a lot of turning on a dime button hooks last night with the rhetoric that I heard about, no, they must, you know, they must respond. Texter says, let's see here. How are the people, this first says, what happened the last time Israel was attacked and we didn't hold them back? Just refresh my memory, please. How are people convinced that Israel people need our help? Well, I think the Israelis, you saw an example of them needing our help, Iron Dome, right? And then the additional U.S. assets that brought down those missiles and drones, that was, I mean, they're not going to tell you exactly how many of those were shot down by Israel and how many were shot down by us, but word I hear is a lot more us than them. But what do you tell Israel to do now? Sit on their hands? It's a tough question.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 151, and it's Midday Mobile. Hey, y'all. Let me get to the text line here, and then I have to get to the Bambi story. I just exposed what I had as a tease. Oh, well. All right. So the text line first. Now, so like Sam says here, Sam T says, good afternoon. Good afternoon, Sam. With Biden putting these aliens on planes and things, why do I still need to get a star ID, driver's license to fly? Sam, quit asking logical questions there. It's for you to do and not for, listen, it's the same thing talking to somebody over the weekend. You know, and I've talked about this many times, that a lot of times the discussion of illegal immigration gets wrapped up with legal immigration. I'm a big proponent of legal immigration. It's what the melting pot, it's what makes our country great. Believe me, you can't have a surname like I do and not believe in the value of immigration, right? The people that are legally doing it in this country, there's a lot of them, like the person I talked to this weekend, that are damn frustrated by the people that these people are paying in the system, getting the legal ones, paying in the system, working, not getting anything back, not a citizen. And here are people that are doing it illegally and getting money and plane trips and all that, Sam. So, I mean, imagine their frustration as well. I mean, you're punishing the people that are doing it correctly and rewarding the ones that are not. What do you think that gets you? All right, Roy in Spanish Fort said, I believe Israel has to hit one specific thing in Iran to make a point. Okay, do you think, like, right, would that be military kind of, or would it be something that's, an icon in the country? You see what I'm saying? Is it a structure that's iconic of Iran, or is it something tactical if they hit one place? Pat says, let's see, if someone attacks the U.S., you'd expect the U.S. to respond. Why do Americans think it's not the same for every other country in the world? And I completely hear what you're saying, Pat. Well written. At the same time, does that lead to World War III? And here's the, just talk about what's real. As much as we try to get Iran and other countries not to get nuclear weapons, the reason you get nuclear weapons is you're undeniable at that point, right? As a nation, people can bully you until you have a nuclear weapon. That's why always the push for nuclear weapons. There's two classes of countries on Earth, those with the nuke and those with not the nuke. And when it comes into realpolitik, having the nuke is a real big deal. You know, nobody comes in and takes over your country and ousts you when you have a nuke. So that's why, I mean, as much as Iran is a bad player and I would say a source of so many issues for us, but I can also, if I put myself in Iran as an Iranian, but if I did, they want a nuke because they want to be undeniable, right? And they want to kick the United States out of the greater Levant, and they become the power brokers there, right? They see U.S. interference here, and of course, death to Israel, that's number one, but I'm talking about like two or three down the list. Beyond death to Israel, they want to be the boss. And I said the other day, with them playing footsies with Russia and thinking that Russia is, once Iran, you know, would get what they want, that Russia would say, okay, y'all got it, here are the keys, that's foolish. Russia's making friends with Iran to try to be there to be able to take more power if Iran gains any. Let's see. This text earlier who said, how are the people convinced Israeli people need our help? Goes on to say, let them off the leash completely. It's their fight. We should just shut up and watch. That's not going to happen. Jim says, I think consulates are considered to be the land of the country that occupies them. Of course, the Muslims don't recognize that, or embassy. Not sure the difference. Yeah, maybe it was an embassy, not a consulate. I think it was an embassy. It's a violation of the Vienna Convention to hit that facility. And for the Israelis to say, well, there was military stuff going on there. You don't think we have embassies around the world that have CIA there? I mean, you don't think we have some kind of, if we start saying it's okay to hit embassies, really worried what that leads to. Larry and Daphne, well, it's concerning how Israel will respond. I back Israel in its response 100%. My main worry is that I have had, as of late, is how many young American citizens are in support of Hamas, Iran, and other terrorist organizations here on American soil while burning American flags. Larry, count me in with you. I'm with you. That worries me as well. Terry says Iran has no way to fight a war in Israel outside of air attacks or terror type of attacks in their proxies. Iran could pull Hezbollah's chain in Lebanon and mount an ineffective and semi-conventional ground attack. Israel would be restricted to airstrikes, special ops, and cyber attack. Remember the good old cyber attack that I talked about back? I loved it back when we derailed their nuclear program, not with bullets, but with the Stuxnet virus. Now, we probably did with bullets as well. If you look at the history of how many engineers are working on the nuclear program and Iran had unfortunate accidents, they got Navalny'd. But the Stuxnet virus. So the cyber thing is interesting to me. Let's see. Jim and Sim says hit where Iran is enriching uranium. You know, I don't know if their nuclear facilities, the full facility centrifuge, I think they're so far underground. Maybe they could hit them. But I don't know that. My point is I understand Israel's plight. I do. I mean, I have no question about what side I'm on. But I'm on the side of the United States first. And the idea of a wider regional war since, what, I was talking about this before Halloween, y'all, continues to worry me as we ratchet up little by little. The Overton window keeps moving. The rheostat gets turned up a little bit more. You know, they always talk about how you boil a frog. Well, that's what I worry That's what I worry is happening big time. All right, Paul Feinbaum show on the way next. Oh, yeah, CB Carl said, Sean, please don't forget today is National Lineman's Appreciation Day. I did that kind of work in battalion and see what they're capable of after every hurricane. Baldwin EMC rocks. I would say all the linemen out there rock every day, and especially when you have no power after a storm. What a welcome sight to see linemen coming down the street. So I'll second that, CB Carl, and we'll do it again tomorrow for the Friday edition of Midday Mobile. Y'all have a great one. Feinbaum next.
I am a lineman for the county, and I drive the main road.